Greetings once again, McBurney here, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome back. It is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show that you've all been waiting for. It's the season finale. Yes, it's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And we've had an interesting Christmas. Well, did I wish everybody a Merry Christmas? Let me wish everybody a Happy New Year. But yeah, we had a strange Christmas around here. Our whole house is in a pod outside. Putting this baby on the market New Year's Day. Yep, 12:01 a.m. on New Year's Day. We put this baby on the market, and so we don't have anything in the house, and we had to break it to our girls that Santa's not coming this year. There's not going to be a Christmas at the McBurney compound. My kids only got two Christmas presents. Yeah, they got a lesson on how to use a caulking gun, which my oldest daughter, Nicole, at 13, she mastered it, yes, caulked her very first windowsill all on her own. I was very impressed. They also learned how to wash the exterior of the house's windows while standing on an 8-12 pitch, which was, I think it was a moment that they'll remember for a lifetime. I mean, how invaluable can knowing how to caulk be? What is that worth over a lifetime? So forget about an Xbox. Give your kid a bow saw or a caulking gun for Christmas. Get them out on the roof. While they were washing the windows out on the roof, I was afraid the police were going to come. Because that was a bit scary at times for me. But they did it. And a fine lesson we all learned, I think. And the place is so squeaky clean now. You know, there's an old Okinawan proverb. Are you familiar with this proverb? Yes, it goes something like this. A man's house is very much like his car. Always cleanest the day he sell it. That's actually not an Okinawan proverb. I just made that up. But I find it ironic that when the house is in perfect shape now, perfect, there's not a nick, there's not a scratch. All the little spaces in between the stuff in the kitchen, all that grease, and it's all gone. It's all beautiful clean. You walk in and it smells like a Mr. Clean commercial. It's almost glistening. And then we're going to walk away from it all. Well, hopefully. We'll see if they don't collapse this economy before New Year's. In fact, let's start with some economic news. We got to go to Russia to get an important breaking story. Vladimir Putin has ordered his government to curb rising vodka prices. That's according to the BBC. Vladimir was quoted. He has some concerns. He says, quote, "The high price of vodka, it could encourage the consumption of illegal and possibly unsafe alcohol," unquote. So Vlad he's basically putting a cap on the price of vodka. Yeah, now let's see. Inflation in Russia is at almost 10%. And according to the BBC, since last year, the price of a pint of vodka has increased by around 30%. It's up to it's increased $4. I have to do the math on that. $4.33, so $12 for a pint of vodka. Is that a lot? Sounds a little steep for a pint. I'm not a vodka drinker, so I wouldn't know, but it sounds, I don't know, that sounds kind of steep. That could be a crisis in Russia. Yeah, you know, they say that Stalin couldn't sleep unless he drank at least a half a gallon of vodka. And they don't know if it was half a gallon, yeah. Well, that's nothing. Winston Churchill was legally intoxicated every minute that he was awake. And yeah, it could, alcohol could be a major cause of World War II, although Hitler was a teetotaler, that guy. He never touched it. Nope, didn't smoke, didn't drink. And anyway, but that's off the subject. What was the subject here that I was going for? Well, I can't recall now. It probably was. Oh, the whole Russian economy. You know, the Saudis decided not to cut production in the face of a worldwide glut in oil, which they usually do to keep the price pumped up. But the Saudis are mad at the Russians over Syria. And they're also mad at South Dakota, North Dakota, and Texas and other American oil producers. And so the Saudis decided they were going to let the price bottom out to see if they could push people out of the global oil game. And, well, I mean, it's playing with fire. I mean, if you think the price of vodka in Moscow could cause a war, what about the global price of oil plunging? It could cause problems is all I'm saying. And I hope we're able to sell our house and buy something else before the whole thing collapses. Now, let's move from Russia. Let's see here. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the New York Times is reporting that the good times are rolling. Everything is fantastic. Economic vital signs in the third quarter were the strongest in a decade here in the United States. The Times reports that the economy grew last quarter at its fastest rate in over 10 years, providing the strongest evidence that the recovery is finally gaining sustained power more than 5 years after it began. I'm sorry, I have to laugh. It's funny how Barry won the election. And the day after he was inaugurated, I think, well, within the first 90 days, the whole midstream media declared that the recession was over. And now we finally got economic growth 5 years later. Interesting how that works. Let's see. According to the Times, the Commerce Department, they revised their numbers, and they revised them upward from 4% to 5%. And they say it was led by an upswing in investment in business. And they say the third quarter was the strongest since the summer of 2003. I mean, if you're willing to believe any of that. Anyway, I had a pretty good third quarter. I can't complain. And a pretty good fourth quarter. And so my economic outlook's been pretty good. And according to the Times, the Dow Jones has closed above 18,000, which is a record. And yada, yada. Well, now that the data's out there, there's talk that the Fed may take some action in June. That's in regards to their quantitative easing that they've been doing, which is basically the Fed buying bonds from the government with money that's actually already the government's or something like that. All very confusing. But they're basically just creating money. And they've been doing it for, how long has the Fed been doing the QE? I think they've been doing it since W was in office. Yeah, George W. Bush. Quite possibly the stupidest man to ever occupy the Oval Office. And not to say anything about him politically. I think he's a fairly astute politician. Just kind of dumb. And so the quantitative easing goes on, but they may take some action in June. A stronger economy, says the Times, creates a compelling case for tightening, raising interest rates, stopping with the rampant printing of money. But I'm convinced, as you well know if you've listened to this program, that the Fed can't stop quantitative easing any more than Sony can stop quantitative sleazing, as we said last week. Do I want to talk about this, that stupid movie? I don't think so. I think the moment has passed, right? The moment. You know what I found ironic was I heard not only in the midstream media, but even on conservative talk radio, I heard certain talkers saying that we as Americans had a patriotic duty to go see what is basically Beavis and Butthead circa 2014. Just mindless adolescent crotch stupidity. And certain talkers said, well, we should all go see. Well, you shouldn't go see this kind of garbage. And frankly, I'm disappointed that whoever was behind the hacking wasn't able to stop the movie from being released altogether. That was the big disappointment of the week. But back to the economy. As I said, I don't think the Fed can stop QE. They may try to raise interest rates in June. They might try to do something, but if they do, Katie, bar the door. I mean, the way this economy's been pumped up and bailed out, it's like a zombie with an excellent plastic surgeon. You know, if the people suddenly see under the veneer, confidence could collapse overnight. And then the whole con is over. And all the con men take their money, and I don't know where they go. Where do you go once you've robbed a nation and looted a treasury? Especially like one of the nicer countries like America. It could all end up in Jamaica? I don't know. But it could all collapse any minute. That's why when we look at houses out in the country, we're making sure that they have a hand crank for the well.
Yeah.
Just in case. I mean, I'm not paranoid or anything. I don't have a tinfoil hat. I haven't seen any black helicopters. But I've just never experienced such economic and moral insanity. I mean, conservative talk show hosts saying to go see a moronic sex comedy. Is talk radio even alive anymore? Are these people just programmed by someone else at higher headquarters? Well, here at The Worldview, we are still alive, and we're here to actually take a conservative tack on the news for all you people, because I know you need to hear it. I do. Let's see. We'll go now down to, Guantanamo via Afghanistan, or the other way around, Afghanistan via Guantanamo, which is in Cuba for all you publicly educated kids out there. That's in Cuba. Cuba. The Pentagon said Saturday, this is according to Fox News, the Pentagon has said that it released four Afghan detainees from Guantanamo Bay, and they've released them back to their home country, the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. The Islamic Republic? When did that start? Have they always called themselves the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan? I don't recall that. Now, I know they just installed a new government there, Hamid Karzai. Amazing that that guy could still be alive. When he got elected, I called him a dead man walking. But apparently he was able to peacefully coexist with the Taliban. But when did this start, the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan? I remember that Iran calls themselves an Islamic Republic, and they're our sworn enemy as far as I can recall. But there it is right there, Fox News. The Islamic Republic of Afghanistan has accepted four of their native sons returning home from Guantanamo Bay as directed by the president. And some lackeys working for Barry say that this release is an indication of improved U.S.-Afghan relations. And Fox News points out that there is no requirement that the Afghan government further detain the men identified as Mohammed Zahir, Shawali Khan, Abdul Ghani, and Ki Ali Gul. Just remember those names in case they come up in a future terrorist attack, and that way we can have one more thing to blame on the Barry Ho administration. And I think he's going to shut down Gitmo before he leaves office. I do. I think he's got just enough chutzpah that he would do it. And, of course, they say right here in the story that they are expected to release as many as 64 more of these terrorists at Guantanamo over the next few weeks and months. The top American commander in Afghanistan has raised concerns that they could pose a danger to the troops. Our troops and others there in the country. But they said that, and then they had a sit-down meeting with Barry Ho and his minions, and now they've changed their tune. Now they've said, okay, it's okay. Maybe they have a plan to kill the guys as soon as they... I would hope there's someone in the military lying in wait at the airport And as soon as Mohammed, Shawali, Abdul, and Key get off the plane, an unfortunate incident should befall them, and they will go and they will meet face to face, not with Allah. No, no, no. They're going to meet the judge. That's right, their creator and the judge, Jesus Christ. We're coming back. My extremely attractive audio engineer. She's in a bit of a hurry because of a roast. Yes, she's exited the studio, but only for the moment. She'll be back as soon as she can. She has a roast beef Jones going for the last week or so. And so she went out on a limb and she bought the big 6-pounder. And that's a lot of pressure. Cooking a roast, you know, I mean, you got like $30 invested into this hunk of meat, and I mean, you've only got one chance to get it right, and I can't take that kind of pressure, and that's why I don't cook. I don't cook, but I could talk about food. Sure. Well, a couple things. First of all, I saw a hilarious post by a friend of mine on Facebook who he's been living in Texas for many years, and he recently made a foray back to the left coast in the liberal wonderland up in Oregon. And he was shocked and dismayed to find that they were charging him 5 cents per bag for paper sacks at the local grocery store. And they've outright banned all plastic bags. But he did make a note that you could opt to bring your own bags made from the local hemp. At which point, I was ripped in half. Yeah, it was hilarious. I was on the floor laughing. But that's the way it is, right? But food, you want to talk about food? I'll tell you, I want to know what's up with the white gravy for my chicken fried steak. Now, yeah, is there some kind of looming shortage that only Village Inn is aware of? And that's why you get a dollop about the size of a 50-cent piece on a piece of chicken fried steak that's as big as your hand? What's up with that? Is there a gravy? Is there a shortage? Has Texas cut production? Do we need a pipeline? Maybe we need a pipeline. Bring in more white gravy from Lubbock. We need a direct pipeline. I never can understand, but I have to order on the side. I'll pay extra for enough white gravy to at least cover the whole piece of meat, for crying out loud. All right. That ends the food section of the program today. If you have any recipes, feel free to send them over to Doug@theweeklyworldview.com. We'd be happy to consider any and all. I sent a coworker of mine my extremely attractive audio engineer's recipe for Colorado green chili, Santa Fe style Colorado green chili. She makes the best green chili stew on the planet. There's no restaurant. We don't even eat Mexican food out anymore. We can't do it. Nope. Maybe once in a while we'll have some street tacos if we're out in San Diego. But we can't go to these Mexican restaurants because my Okinawan wife has outclassed them all with the most phenomenal burrito, beef burrito, soaked in Colorado green chili stew. Oh, yeah. No, that recipe is not available for public consumption. Mm-mm. Nope, that one's top secret. We'll hold that one close to the vest here at the McBurney compound. All right, now let's get to some serious news because there is a war on, for crying out loud. And ISIS, according to the Daily Mail out of London, ISIS is turning Christian churches into torture chambers where they force attendees to convert to Islam. Now this tells you the fact that they force people at the point of a sword or a gun to convert to Islam. This tells you not only how evil they are, but how stupid they are. Because it's impossible to force anyone to, really, it's impossible to override the will of any person. I mean, you can make a person say whatever you want them to say. Stick a knife at their throat. Sure, they'll say, Allahu Akbar. But you're not going to actually force anyone to convert to anything. You're just a mad barbarian on a power trip, and they all need to be killed. ISIS is also stripping the Christian churches of ancient relics to help fund their terrorist activity. Christians were reportedly being held in raided churches in Karakash in Iraq, which at one time was held by us, the good guys, and now it's held by them, with their black flag, with their pirate flag. An expert in the area told the Jerusalem Post that the terror organization's stated goal was to, quote, wipe out Christianity, unquote. Bring it on. I tell you what. The fact that they say that publicly and that they're burning down churches and killing Christians in broad daylight in front of God and everybody, and the United States, Great Britain, France, Canada, and Australia are doing nothing. Okay, a few airstrikes. Are these politicians even alive, or are they? I can't understand. Have we crossed over some precipice in world history where the previous 5,000 years just don't matter anymore? Is that where we are? Are these politicians just animated by some computer somewhere, and they're programmed? It just seems bizarre to me. Well, I'm still alive, and when I hear that they're stripping churches of relics and burning them and killing Christians and forcing people to convert, I mean, I want to raise up an army and go destroy these fascists. That's what I can't believe that other people in our government who could actually do that are not doing that. It's more than embarrassing. It's quite disheartening, and I'm very concerned for the future, not only of Western civilization, but for civilization in general. This kind of behavior can't be tolerated. I'm sorry, it simply cannot be tolerated. If the politicians, if they think that Americans are just too war-weary to man up against ISIS, well, they've made a tremendous misjudgment about the American people, and especially about the young American male who does not have a patriotic duty to go see a crotch comedy from Sony Pictures. But they would step up to their patriotic duty to go and destroy the satanic forces of evil that have erupted around the world if they would just be given an opportunity to do so. All right. Now, back to the war, because there's more shocking and disturbing news. A 13-year-old Nigerian girl was presented to journalists last week by police and instructed to recant how Islamist militants forced her to take part in a suicide attack. I said, a 13-year-old girl. My oldest is 13. Story caught my eye. She says that her mother and father are both Boko Haram sympathizers. They're in Nigeria. Boko Haram sympathizers. To read a sentence like that and to realize I share this planet, you and I share this planet with this mother and father, it should send chills up and down your spine. Boko Haram sympathizers. They handed their daughter over to Boko Haram and they asked her if she would do a suicide bombing, and she said, no, I can't. They told her, you would go to heaven if you do it. And she told them no. Then they said they would shoot her. And so she said, okay, I'll do it. Faced with the threat of death, the 13-year-old girl finally agreed to take part in the attack several days later, but she never had any intention of doing it. Now, she said she and three other girls, all wearing explosives, were brought to the market there in a Nigerian town, and she was injured when one of the girls she was with detonated her bomb.
blew herself up. These are children. Well, she ran away. She ended up in a hospital where the doctors and the nurses discovered that she was strapped with explosives. So this is what we're up against. And I'm sorry, this doesn't go away. This type of barbarism will not just run its course and just go away. This has to be met with the utmost prejudice. According to the Daily Mail report, Boko Haram has increasingly used female suicide bombers, including teenagers, as part of their, well, the Daily Mail calls it a five-year insurgency. It's actually just a reign of terror from the bowels of hell itself. Boko Haram says they're using girls to sow fear across the nation of Nigeria, and I'm certain that they're very effectively doing that. Just awful. Awful. Now let's come back over here to we'll get away from the war overseas. And we'll come back over here to what is just a festering social and political and cultural war. Just under the surface. Festering, bubbling, boiling. The Free Beacon reports that the Fraternal Order of Police is demanding that normalization with Cuba be conditioned upon the immediate return of several cop killers currently enjoying asylum there. Did you know this? I did not know this. Cuba is still providing protection to a handful of U.S. fugitives guilty of murdering police officers, the most notorious being Joanne Chesimard, who murdered New Jersey State Trooper Warner Foster back in 1973. She escaped prison in 79 and fled to Cuba, where she now lives under the protection of the newly friendly with Barry Cuban government. Yes. Fidel and Raul, according to the Beacon, play host to at least two members of a group called the Republic of New Africa, who murdered New Mexican State Trooper Robert Rosenbluck in 1972. Cop killers in Cuba. And I didn't hear a word about this when Barry announced that we're normalizing and we're friended them all on Facebook. Even worse than that, he friended them at the State Department. He friended them at the UN. And he's probably going to fly down there and get in a hot tub with both of them. And I didn't know about these cop killers, or I would have been even more outraged than I was, and I was fairly outraged, as I know you all probably were as well. We have a quote from the FOP. They say, quote, "I think we can all agree that no responsible government should harbor and protect anti-police assassins." That's the FOP National President Chuck. Well, Chuck, that's where you're wrong. We don't all agree. No. Pals of Barry and members of the proctocracy, they disagree. They think we can be friendly with people who harbor police assassins. And people at the highest levels of our government seem not only comfortable with the idea of police assassins, but it seems to me that the police assassins kind of fit in with what their overall goal is, what their worldview is, what their end game is. They're totally comfortable, not only with being friendly with communists who harbor police assassins, but with establishing an anti-police environment that practically encourages police assassinations.
that a guitar solo? I never realized there was a guitar solo in that. I didn't realize there was a guitar player in that band. Currently residing in the Where Are They Now file. It's a duo. Well, I'm not familiar. I never listen to that kind of stuff. I would have been embarrassed. Kidding me? Anyway, I did not realize that they had a guitar player, so maybe I've changed my mind. By the way, my extremely attractive audio engineer has returned to the studio. I feel a lot better. Well, I told him all about the roast. Just try to take it easy. All right, now, let's move on. If I can avert my eyes from my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's difficult. It's difficult when she comes in the room. Hard for me to pay attention. I have to turn the other way. Look into the makeshift sound suppression system. I can smell it. Oh, that's good. No. Smells good. All right, but you better not blow it. That's all I've got to say. All right, let's go to the politics file. CNN reports that the election is on for all intents and purposes. That's the 2016 election. They say that the first votes of the 2016 campaign won't be cast for another year, but there's already a race well underway, the Christian primary. That's right. It's time for Republicans everywhere to band together, rise up, and bamboozle the Christians once again. The Christian voting bloc being one of the most bamboozled and most easily bamboozleable of any voting bloc in the history of democracy. CNN says that some of the biggest minds and the biggest money in the Republican Party are trying to figure out how to rally Christian conservatives behind one candidate this time. The one candidate, they say the problem in the last few elections, you know, where the Republicans have been embarrassed and shellacked, is that the Christian vote's been split because those darn Christians just won't get in line. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of this article, but every one of the numerous quotes in this article, I'll put a link maybe on the website. You can go and torture yourself and read how CNN analyzes Republican politics. I mean, it's enough to it give you a toothache just sitting here reading it. But all these quotes from these pro-family industry hacks. Maybe you're not familiar with the pro-family industry. Let me just define that real quickly for those of you who may be new to the broadcast. As we know, we have thousands and thousands of new people joining every week on iTunes. Tip of the hat, thanks to iTunes for having the show available, making it available to the great unwashed masses who need it so badly. The pro-family industry is an industry of nominal Christians who have made a fortune convincing Christians that we're winning the culture war while they actively lose the culture war. And they've been at it for about 40 years. And they've raised billions of dollars. And they've spent, and they've raised, and they've spent, and, well, they've also taken salaries, and they have, you know, they've got their 401ks, and they've got their retirements funded. All the time convincing Christians that next election we're going to save America. The pro-family industry, hacks like Family Research Council, Concerned Women for America, The Family Leader, and all the rest of the pro-family industry regulars. Well, they're all quoted in the CNN article because they're all lined up to kiss the ring of this outfit called the Council for National Policy. I never heard of them. But I'm sure they're just some more industry hacks. And I won't quote any of these people individually because I try not to give the adversary any free publicity. But I will just note that each one of their quotes are completely scrubbed of one issue. There is one issue they will not mention, and that is the legalized murder of innocent people by abortion. Yeah, all right, I said it. That's right. If you want to turn me off, you go ahead. Turn it off. You don't want to hear it. Go to hell. Plug your ears and go straight to hell. You don't want to hear about it. Well, it's the one issue that would truly coalesce the Christian vote. And it's the one issue that the pro-family industry has declared verboten.
It's not to be mentioned. It's the unspeakable. Because for a generation, the pro-life industry, the pro-family industry, of which the pro-life industry is just one, element. Yeah, the pro-life industry has presided over the slaughter of almost 60 million innocent people all the time, telling us they had a strategy to win. And they've made a fine living. I forget what the head of Planned Parenthood, National Right to Life Committee makes, but it's a pretty fat paycheck. I mean, and when you've utterly lost, and your entire goal, when your goal has been entirely missed, you typically don't get a paycheck that big. But at National Right to Life Committee, they came to do good, and they've done quite well indeed. Let's put it that way. So they've been telling us that we can win these arguments, this so-called culture war, abortion, homosexuality, pornography, adultery, immorality. We can win on these issues without God. That's what they, and so now it's to the point where they don't even want to bring up those issues anymore. They want to talk about the economy. They want to talk about jobs. And they will talk about gay marriage once in a while if they're pushed into a corner. But mostly it's the economy, it's jobs. That's the new culture war front lines is in. Anyway, that's what makes people so uncomfortable about discussing abortion, by the way. Because it's a documented fact that if you're on the radio and you start talking about abortion, you'll lose about 70% of your audience within a minute. If they realize you're going to go on for any amount of time, they change the channel. Documented fact. And the reason is because discussing abortion quickly leads directly to God. And it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. That's in the Bible. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And by the way, that's from the New Testament. And I'm not going to tell you what book it's in. You look it up yourself. It's in the New Testament. So people don't want to talk about God. They want to forget. The last thing they want to face is their own mortality and the fact that they might be held responsible for what they've done in their life by the Creator, by a deity that holds their very existence in His hand. They don't want to talk about that. But so back to the issue. Well, that really is the issue, but there's a side issue, and that's politics. What's the solution to electing conservatives in 2016? How are we going to do it? Do I have a plan? Do I have a 5-point plan or a 6-point plan or a 13-point plan to elect conservatives in 2016 and save America? No, I don't, because there is no solution. The democratic system, small d, democratic system in America, is so corrupt that it's beyond producing a conservative candidate. It cannot happen. The conservative wing of the Republican Party is dead. It been killed a long time ago. And I think it was George W. Bush who said, "What conservative movement? I beat Gary Bauer. There's no conservative movement." That was George W. Bush. He was the last allegedly conservative. Well, there is no conservative in the Republican Party. There can't be. Even though the Republican Party is dead and bloated, I mean, you and I, we're still among the living. So the Republicans aren't going to save us. We've got to save ourselves and our families as if by fire, because the political leadership has abandoned us. And they've abandoned the world stage. They've given it up to the likes of Vladimir Putin and al-Baghdadi at the head of ISIS. So there is no solution. There is no conservative candidate. There will not be a conservative elected in 2016, and he ain't going to save America. I'm convinced that only events that we can't even be aware of yet, I mean some unknown event or events that literally scare the hell out of the masses, can produce a conservative candidate. That's the only thing that can do it. There's no strategery on the part of Karl Rove and Crossroads America and Mitt Romney and Jeb Bush. They're not going to come up with it. No, Ted Cruz isn't either, and neither is the other guy with the bad hair. The dentist. No, ophthalmologist. What's his name? Paul. Rand Paul. No, he's not going to do it either. There are no conservatives left. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Events are events, yeah. What's up with this? Another plane is missing. That brings up the other plane that's missing, at least before. I haven't really looked at the news today. Try not to depress myself on Sunday. But another plane missing from another Muslim country? Does that strike anyone as odd? Now, I know most thinking people will go with the obvious theory that CNN is behind it, you know, in a bid to recapture the ratings they had the last time a plane disappeared from a Muslim country. But me, I'm going to go out on a limb, because when I heard that another plane was missing from another Muslim country, it reminded me of the morning of September 11th. The first plane that hit the Twin Towers, all we could all think of was what some horrible freak accident. It's just horrible, but just some freak thing. But when the second plane hit, well, immediately we all knew exactly what it was. It's amazing how that moment crystallized in the mind of every thinking person in America, and we all thought the same thing. It's Islamic terrorists. That's what we all thought. And now we didn't even think it. We knew it immediately. And so now there's a second plane that's just vanished. I'm sorry, planes don't vanish. When they crash, you hear the plane crashed. It scares me. I shouldn't say scares, but it scares me. I'm afraid that some bad guys might have these planes and they might be planning to do something bad with them, possibly. So that could be that maybe it's the terrorists. Maybe that's what it takes to produce conservatism again in America, is somebody's got to scare the hell out of these godless heathens and make them scurry back into the shadows where they belong. And let normal American people who have some concept of the last 5,000 years of human history run the place again before you get us all killed. You know, the pro-family industry's system of kingmaking that I've experienced since I was of voting age, it just ensures that the current political process is absolutely incapable of producing a leader that could solve our problems. I know. Does it sounds pessimistic? Well, okay. Call me a pessimist. I mean, I know God wins in the end, so ultimately I'm an optimist, big picture kind of way. From 30,000 feet, you know, I'm an optimist. But as for the politics of the day, as for democracy in America, I mean, as far as let's save America in 2016, rise up the Tea Party, let's save it, let's take it back. As far as all that, yeah. Yeah, I'm a pessimist. Feel like I'm frustrated. It's driving me. My head's about to break. Insanity inside of me. It's like I'm wild. Feel like I'm frustrated. I'm hypnotized. These feelings can't be cased. It's gravity is killing me. I can't stand up for it. Feel like I'm frustrated. It's like I'm wild. Feel like I'm hypnotized. I'm hypnotized. These feelings can't be cased. It's gravity. It's killing me. I can't stand up from falling down. Let's go to North Carolina. We've got a report again from the New York Times. The old gray lady reporting that there is a North Carolina law that required physicians to perform an ultrasound, display the sonogram to the pregnant mother, and describe the fetus to the woman seeking an abortion, and then you can kill the baby. Now, to me, that's one of the most sick and disgusting exercises that any person could suggest that another person go through. I'm going to have you watch a video of the actual child. I'm going to describe it to you, and then if you want to kill it, well, then you can kill it. In fact, I'm going to write into the law that at that point, then you can kill the baby. But that's what passes for conservatism. Hey, if it's a human being, if it's a person, you can't ever kill an innocent person. I'm sorry. There's no exceptions. I don't care how tear-jerking your story is. I don't care how difficult your situation is. You can't kill an innocent person to solve a problem. Ever, not once, never. And those of us who say there are no exceptions to the law against killing innocent people, well, we're called extremists, purists, by Karl Rove and Mitt Romney. Who's your other, the lawyer from Texas, right? Ted Cruz, right? We're a bunch of extremists compared to them, because they know when it is appropriate to murder an innocent person, because there's certain political expediencies that we simply all have to realize that we must operate within, and some innocent people are going to be murdered. But hey, we could still elect Republicans, and isn't that what it's really all about? Well, that's not what it's all about. It's about teaching children that killing innocent people is absolutely unacceptable. And that's far more important than who wins the next election, is what we teach our children. And what we write into our laws, or what we allow the proctocracy to write into our laws, in fact teaches our children who we are. So in North Carolina, they passed a law that mom could watch a video of the child and then she could kill the child. Well, the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit has struck it down. The law was passed by North Carolina's Republican-led legislature as instructed by the pro-life industry to tell the Republicans, we can have a victory. We'll pass laws that say, well, if the baby's under 20 weeks, you can kill it. Or if the mom watches a video, then they can kill it. And they claim that it'll stop some abortions. And I don't deny that it might stop some abortions. Don't get me wrong. I don't deny that. But what you have done tactically to win a victory, and mostly to raise money by sending out fundraisers telling people how you're winning and how you're achieving these political victories and touting your own skills at manipulating the political process so that we can have a pro-life victory. That's what it's really all about with these people. In your tactical decision, you've ruined the entire strategic vision to win the war. You've abandoned the sanctity of an innocent person's life. And once you abandon that, you've lost the war. There's no point in fundraising letters after that. But that's what they've done. Similar, back to the story here from the New York Times, similar ultrasound requirement, a similar requirement was passed in Texas by Republicans who think they're conservatives and say that if a mom watches a video and then decides to kill the baby, it's okay with them. But they say, but wait, they were going to kill all the babies before that, and now we're going to save some. Well, you're going to save some, but you're going to teach everyone that the unborn child can be killed in certain circumstances. And when you take the long view, which is where Americans are so deficient, when you take the long view and you realize what that teaches the next generation, then you're basically, you've surrendered, you've lost the war. But like a zombie, you act like you're still alive, but you're actually dead and bloated. You might as well take your retirement money, take your sizable retirements, and just get out, because you've lost the war. Listen to this. As if to make my point for me, I've got a quote from the president of North Carolina Right to Life, an affiliate of the National Right to Life Committee, an affiliate of the pro-family industry. She says, quote, I hope the Supreme Court will eventually weigh in on the law because it's needed to help women make informed choices about abortion. So that's the North Carolina Right to Life. She's just said she's pro-choice. The law that they wrote allows for the choice to kill the baby after you watch the video. She says she wants to help women make informed choices about abortion. So just let that sink in the next time you get a fundraising letter from one of these pro-life industry hacks who are educating the next generation of political leaders, religious leaders, and plumbers and electricians and sales reps and everybody else, that in certain circumstances it's okay to murder an innocent person if you can score a political victory. That's what they're teaching. And then that's what loses the culture war. And by the way, the end of the culture war means the death of all of us and our kids. That's what losing the culture war means. I think it was Tocqueville who said that the foundation of America's greatness is its deep religiosity, the depth of the Christian faith, and the morality that permeates American society genuinely impressed him. And the reason we've achieved economic, social, technical advancement beyond any civilization in all of history, as far as we know, is because we could be trusted to keep our word. Contracts meant something. Patents meant something. The law meant something. And losing the culture war means none of those things are true anymore, which means someone else will come in. The Babylonians, the Assyrians, somebody will come in, and they will kill you and I and our children, and they'll take all of our stuff. That's what happens throughout history to great powers that suddenly find themselves in a spiritual, moral vacuum. That vacuum is going to be filled by someone the likes of the guys who strapped the bomb on the 13-year-old girl. So while you are among the living, you better stand up and say something. And you better stand up and do something. I don't want to look at my grandchildren knowing that I was the one who lost it. So, now you want to talk about the loss of the heart of the West. And the fact that so many people are literally living dead people. Listen to this story. This is from CNN. Ireland's High Court, the Supreme Court in Ireland, has ruled that doctors can withdraw life support in the case of a clinically dead woman who is 18 weeks pregnant. The woman's family, her husband, her mother, her father, had appealed for life support to be stopped, saying they wanted her to die with dignity. Now, the baby was alive. Some of the doctors said there was no reasonable prospect that the unborn child would survive, but other doctors disagree. In fact, there are documented cases of life support keeping the biological functions of a pregnant woman alive long enough, or functioning long enough, so that a baby can be brought to term and born alive. And what ate away at me about this story is I thought, how can a family develop such cold, hard hearts? Your daughter has died. She had a brain aneurysm and died. And she's been on life support for a while, since December 3rd, at 18 weeks pregnant. A girl in her 20s, you lose your daughter. She dies. It's horrible. But you have an opportunity to bring a grandchild into the world through the tragedy. Now, it's the hard thing to do. It's difficult. It might even be very expensive. And it could be very traumatic and emotional and difficult, and the child might die. It's the hard thing to do. But how do you choose not to do that? I cannot relate to these people, this family. I certainly can't relate to the Supreme Court in Ireland. But I can't relate to the husband, the mother, the grandma, the grandpa. How is it that you are so dead inside of you that you, I just can't get it. One of the justices on the Irish Supreme Court says, to maintain and continue the present somatic support for the mother would deprive her of dignity in death. Dignity in death. Might I say to the justice that there is no such thing. There is no dignity in death. Are you familiar with death? Well, I think she is, because I think she herself is dead and somehow just animated by some evil force. I can't relate. Dignity in death? Have you ever seen a dead body? Dignity. The court also said that continuing to keep her alive, trying to save the unborn child, would subject her father, her partner and her young children to unimaginable distress in a futile exercise. Futile. Finally, one of the judges said, medical practitioners with the best interests of both mother and child in mind do not believe there is any medical reason for continuing. So in the best interest of the child, we have to kill the child, is what they said. That's the opposite of Solomonic wisdom. That's the anti-Solomon right there. Lawyers representing the baby say they will not appeal. They've been defeated. Anyway, that's just a... I can't relate. I'm glad I cannot relate to those people on the court and that family. I'm glad I cannot relate to that family. All right. I got to lighten it up. I'm going to go to reason number 684 to get or keep your children out of the government school systems. Now, this is another story that Bob Enyart would not let me do on his show, because his list is only public schools, K through 12. Me, I go around the world and I go all the way to postgraduate. Yeah, all of it. If it's state funded, I'm going to give you a reason to avoid it. Let's go to Stanford University. Stanford has announced that the very Reverend Dr. Jane Shaw, has joined the school's Department of Religious Studies as Dean and Professor of Religious Studies. Yeah. According to the university's press release, Shaw will be tasked in providing spiritual, religious, and ethical leadership to the university community, serve as minister of Memorial Church right there at Stanford, and teach as a professor of religious studies. Yes. Are anyone out there familiar with the very Reverend Dr. Jane Shaw? Well, she says she leads a dual life as a scholar and a priest. Yeah, and she says the greatest crisis right now facing mankind is not the spiritual death of Christianity in the Western world. No, she says the greatest current crisis is climate change and the environment. She was ordained as a priest in the Church of England. Her title, the Very Reverend, refers to her status as the dean of a seminary or a divinity school, otherwise known as cemeteries. In 2013, she joined Human Rights Watch. Human Rights Watch, isn't that the group whose leader was just arrested for molesting boys? Yeah, that's them. She's a board member there. And she's an open public dyke. That's right. And she's now the dean for religious life at Stanford University. Reason number 684 to keep or get your children out of the government school system. Speaking of sexual deviance, Michael Sam says that you can't swing a jock strap in an NFL locker room without hitting a queer. And he says all kinds of homosexuals in the NFL called him after he grabbed that skinny white boy and kissed him on national TV. How did he ever think he was going to have a career after that? You would think his agent would have said, Mike, don't grab that skinny white boy and kiss him on TV if you get drafted. Just don't do it. Control yourself. Anyway, he did it. But he says Plea was overwhelmed with phone calls from all the closeted homos in the NFL. He says all these players. Oh, he told this all to Oprah, for whatever that's worth. He says other players wish they had the courage to come out like I did. That visual, I'm sorry, will stick in my head for life. When he grabbed that skinny little white kid and kissed him right there. He says there's a lot of us. I'm not the only one. I'm just the only one who's open. He's also not in the NFL anymore. So anyway, I'm pretty much done with the NFL. I'm pretty much done. And it's not because of Michael Sam or anything else like that, just an aside. I'm almost done with it. Now, the Broncos' humiliating defeat at the hands of the Bengals last Monday night was about the best Christmas gift I could have received. I was on the road. It had been a long day. It was a hard day. I'm alone. I'm away from home. I'm eating garbage instead of food. And I turn on the TV, and lo and behold, the Broncos are humiliated and embarrassed by the hapless Cincinnati Bengals. It was a beautiful thing to watch. You know, it's sad to see such a nice fellow like Peyton Manning get mixed up with the likes of the evil John Elway and soil the sunset of his fine career. It's sad to see. Yeah. Well, him and Elway, they went for the money. They went for the big money, and they got it. They sold a lot of tickets. They made the playoffs. They've won a lot of football games. They went for the big money. They got it. But the dynasty, the legacy, the glory, and frankly, even bigger money, it's getting away from them. It's getting away from them. And it's a beautiful thing to see, I must say. So I don't know if I told the story on the air of our drip cloth, our drop cloth that we use. Did I tell that on the air yet? So we're unpacking stuff, boxes that have, we have stuff that's been in boxes since we moved into this house. And for some reason, we put it in other boxes and we put it in the pod and we're going to take it with us. And one of the things I found was a Super Bowl Sunday newspaper from the Broncos' first glorious Super Bowl win against the hated Green Bay Packers and the foul and vile Green Bay Packers quarterback whose name escapes me. That's all right. Yeah, we don't need to see it. Brett Favre. Anyway, it was a glorious victory. Anyway, so I find in the bottom of a box that newspaper from Super Bowl Sunday, 1998, 99. Anyway, so we're painting everything in the house because we want to make the house look nice for other people. And so I took that newspaper and I spread it out and used it as a drop cloth around the walls as we painted and touched up and. I actually shot a video of that. I should post that on my ever-popular YouTube channel. Where am I going with all this? I don't know. Michael Sam, John Elway. I'm just about done with the NFL. Oh, my gosh. Well, I've gone long. Let's see. All right, let's do two things. I'm going to do two more stories, and then we're going to end this thing. And put you people out of your misery. In September of 2011, a Child Protective Services worker reportedly claimed that the home of homeschoolers Jason and Laura Hogan was messy. And she wanted to come and visit again. They said no. It's pretty annoying, Child Protective Services. I could see that. So this prompted this CPS witch to call the sheriff. And the cops came to the door. And the cops knocked and they said, "We've got a report that you're abusing your kids. We'd like to come in." Well, they refused. And then the police responded by, well, they kicked in the door, sprayed pepper spray in both their faces, hit the dad in the back with a taser, and then took the kids. Yeah, they forced the door open, handcuffed these homeschooling parents, charged them with child endangerment and resisting arrest. And the kids were taken away, put in the custody of the evil, wicked social services. Well, a county judge eventually dropped the charges against the mom and dad, and they were out of their... The parents didn't even see their kids for 9 days. The Hagen family continues to homeschool their kids, and now they're suing the sheriff's department for violating their rights, as well they should, I suppose. But I'm just wondering why they wouldn't let the cops in. I mean, CPS, I can understand. I mean, have you ever met some of these Child Protective Services people? Some of the most high and mighty, self-righteous, annoying people that you'd ever want to meet. So I can understand not letting them in. But I mean, if the cops come to my door and they say, "Hey, we've got a report that you're abusing your kids," I let them in. That's what I would do. I'd want them to see my kids. And then I'd challenge them to take on Nicole, my 13-year-old, in a geography bee. So you want to find out if my kids are getting an education? I'll put her up against any one of you. Let's go right now. She would embarrass the average slack-jawed police officer. Only because the cops went to public school. It's not their fault. They're like everybody else. They're disabled like everyone else. They all went to public school. All right. Now, from the "just how stupid do you think I am" file, we go to a report that evolutionist, famous evolutionist
Richard Dawkins has written a book called The Magic of Reality. And there's a video clip on PBS that says it's inspired by Dawkins' book. And they say that there was no first human. That's right. He says it with a straight face. He says if you traced your family tree back 185 million generations, you wouldn't be looking at a human or a primate or even a mammal. You'd be looking at a fish. So, where along that line does the first human show up? Well, the answer may surprise you. There was no first human. And he says this with a straight face, and I'm thinking, how stupid do you think people are? So, bottom line. There's all kinds of forums discussing this book, The Magic of Reality. One of the commentators says evolution is a very slow process. Compare it to an acorn. It's a seed, but then you plant it, and you come back 10 years later, and it's a tree. But at what point did the acorn turn into a tree? Well, there was no point. And just like that, there was no first human. Okay, don't look over here. Look over there. My left hand's here, my right hand's there. Anyway, it's obvious. Well, the first thing, there was no step when the acorn added information to its genome to become a tree. All the information was in there. And for your acorn story analogy to be applicable, you'd have to plant an acorn and come back 10 years and then there'd be an apple tree. That might fit, but that doesn't happen. Anyway, neo-Darwinian evolution. Yeah. And Big Bang cosmology, old Earth cosmology, it's almost at critical mass and it's going to melt down at any moment. And speaking of the long view, for those of us among the living, come here. 2,000 years from now, historians will look back on evolution in a similar fashion to the way we look at Greek and Roman mythology. And we'll say, wow, people really believe that? It was kind of crazy, you know, that there was no first human and we all evolved from a drop of slime that exploded out of nothing. Really? People believe that? So, hey, don't give up the fight and keep the faith. Because in the end, it'll all come back around, and the Bible and God, well, they'll be proven true as they always are. And then, we'll all get to join in the celebration. So that's what I'm looking forward to. As I'm looking forward to next week, should the Lord tarry, I will return. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Theology Online, American Right to Life, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Till next week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.